Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Corey Lede. Lede began performing music professionally as a preteen and has never stopped, accumulating two Grammy nominations and amassing an impressive array of live performances and recordings. His latest album, his 16th, is Corey Lede, Zydeco, and Black Magic's Live in Alaska, which was released in December 2025. He recently spoke with me about the recording of the album, his family's rich musical history, and his earliest days as a professional musician. That's Corey Lede on Into Music, coming up now. This album is basically what you going to Alaska for the first time.
There's gear.
It was actually my second time.
First time
at Anchorage, and the time before that was in Juneau.
Okay, so second time you go up there, there's recording gear, and you're like, okay, well, if the sun's shining, we'll make hay, right?
Pretty much. Well, actually, I always wanted to do a live project, but every time I went to do it, you know, something didn't work right. Something came up, you know. And it just never happened. And then also, so I usually play Jazz Fest every year. And Jazz Fest normally records their stuff, but that's kind of like a Jazz Fest project. And they don't really like go back and kind of clean things up. They just kind of put it out as it is, you know. So I always wanted to do one for myself. So I said, we're going to Alaska. I said, if we can line everything up right and everything is, you know, how it needs to be, let's see if we can make it happen. So I brought the idea to the folks over there, and they said, yeah, let's do it. So they made sure they had the proper equipment, the proper engineers to work the equipment, and it turned out exactly how I wanted it to turn out.
Even if you're kind of planning a live recording is a little bit dicey because there are some things that you don't know, right? I mean, mics cannot work, hard drives can crash, so it's got to be a little nervy, right?
Yep. And then you always run into the risk of maybe somebody messed up on a song, and it's kind of hard to correct that because everything's live, everything's mic'd, so it might have would have bled over to another microphone. It's just all kind of other things that could have happened.
And then you've got the audience. Now, presumably, they're coming to see you. They like what you do, but audiences are weird too, right? And if you get a weird audience, that can bleed into the performance as well.
Yeah, but this audience was awesome. They enjoyed it from start to finish and asked for more.
Yeah, and that's what I like on the record is that you get this sense of like, you come in strong and then there's like this momentum that builds. It's almost like you're kind of like the band's feeding off of each other, but you're also feeding off this energy in the room. Was that what it was like on the night?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, I tell people all the time, there's definitely an energy when you go to see a live band and when a band is playing in front of a live audience, there's definitely an energy in the room. And that's what I wanted to capture, just that experience, that energy. And it was a great energy over there. It was cold, but it was a great energy over there.
Well, so I'm curious about this, like, Zydeco music in Alaska. Like, that's, like, at first there might be a little bit of a disconnect. Is there a big market for it up there?
Well, I think so. But what I did and what I do with my music, I mean, I'm a Zydeco-based band, but because I play the piano-style accordion, it allows me to dibble and dabble with other styles of genre, you know, other genre of music, because I'm basically playing the piano, like a upright piano. You know, it's just like a guitar or a bass. You know, you can play any style of music. So I can play, for example, I can play a traditional Zydeco song, and then maybe after that, I can play a, you know, a Willie Nelson song, or I could play a anything, a Frank Sinatra song, and since we're in the Christmas holidays, I could even do Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer because it's all right there under my fingertips. So that's what I do. Whenever I go out and I play, like I said, I'm a Zydeco bass band, but I will throw other stuff out there. Smooth jazz. You can hear some of that on the live album. We went into like a little improv, a little funk tune. You can hear that on the album. So yeah. So, but they really enjoyed the Louisiana Creole Zydeco the most because they don't get that much. You can pretty much get all the other styles of music, anytime you want in their area. But Zydeco, it's a treat.
I don't, this is a kind of a crazy thought too, but I was like, okay, but it's also music that comes from like near the water, and you're definitely near the water in Alaska,
Oh
right?
yeah. Yeah.
But there is something, right, about sometimes the geography and music. It's like, oh, that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, like Zydeco, a lot of Zydeco beats have a lot of Caribbean island beats to it. So, and it, you hear it and you don't really at first you don't recognize it, but then when you start to explain it and show people the difference, they're like, ah, I hear it now. So yeah, there's definitely a connection there.
So I'm kind of curious about like your sort of origins with music. Now, am I correct that you grew up like in East Texas?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Houston, Texas.
Okay.
But my dad is and his side of the family is from Parks, Louisiana. And my dad and like a lot of Creoles left Louisiana because at the time there was no work, right? There was no jobs, there was no work. So you have half of Louisiana in Texas, you have another half of Louisiana in California, you have another half in Chicago, another half in New York. So people left, but when they left, they brought their culture with them, right? Luckily for me, my dad just went right there to Houston, which is only like maybe 3.5 hours away from Lafayette. So I mean, you're not really that far. You can just jump on I-10 and be there in a few hours. So
Was he a musician or is he a musician?
yeah, he played drums, but never like in the business, just kind of for like fun and games or hobby, stuff like that. My uncle, he is a drummer too. He played drums with Grambling State University, the snare drum. My grandfather was a Zydeco and jazz drummer. And my grandfather actually played with Clifton Chenier in the early days, like late 40s. And his father, my great grandfather, was straight. Early jazz, bebop, ragtime, bass player who actually played with Bunk Johnson back in the early 1900s. So, and then on the Poche side, it's all jazz musicians. Harold Poche was a trumpet player. His son, Harold Poche Jr., was Ike and Tina Turner's drummer, and then later on was Bobby Bland's drummer. His youngest brother, John Poche, played jazz keyboard. He played with Percy Sledge, B.B. King. Then on the Charles family, we had Hippolyte Charles played trumpet with Louis Armstrong. So it's all over the map. It goes all the way back and it's just all over the map.
Wow. So you're growing up in Texas, but you're aware of this culture and this music from Louisiana. How did you kind of connect with that music then and then kind of dive into it?
Well, my dad said when I was being born, he had like Zydeco music playing. So that's the story. I don't know. But one day, he came home with a cassette of Clifton Chenier, and like from that day on, I was just hooked to Zydeco, And of course, you still had, like I said, a lot of people from Louisiana moved to Houston. So you still had the culture in Houston. It just wasn't as strong as it was from the actual source. For like example, which is one of the reasons why I decided when I finished high school to move back to Parks. For example, like in Parks, you can go in the grocery store and just something simple as going to the grocery store and get a loaf of bread. You can hear older people speaking Creole, Or you can put it on TV and a commercial might come on in between whatever movie you're watching. A commercial may come on and it's probably a Zydeco commercial. Or they might even have a Zydeco program that comes on TV. And of course, the radio, you could put it on just about any station. You're going to hear an accordion somewhere. So it's stronger here than it was in Houston, even though it's still in Houston. But I chose to move back to the source because I wanted to be just all, I wanted to be all around me 24/7.
So when you get back and you're playing with people who maybe have been playing this music a long time, do you start to sense like, okay, here they do it a little bit differently than they might do it, let's say in California or something, you know?
Well, it's pretty much the same. Like I said, when people left, they took their culture with them. So you still, you know, a huge Creole community all in California. They still do their traditions. You know, they still do the boucheries, and they still speaking, you know, Creole French, and it's still there. You just might not see a Zydeco commercial in L.A., you know, or something like that. But the culture is definitely still there.
So Zydeco is so interesting to me because, like, I hear, obviously with the accordion, right, there's, like, there's that French thing that comes through with that. But then, like you said, like, the Caribbean rhythms. And then the fiddle, which is sometimes kind of, like, got that French thing. It's that stew of things that come together, but it's this new thing that emerged from all of that.
Right. So originally, it was just called, like, la la music. Well, even before that, it was all considered French music because everything was, everybody sang in French. So it was all French music. And then it kind of transformed into, like, la la. And then what happened was around the 1920s, so I guess about 100 years ago, when the radio first came out, you know, that's kind of what split things off. Like the Creoles kind of started to lean more to the blues because what they were hearing on the radio, and the Cajuns or the Acadians kind of started leaning a little bit more towards country and Western. And that's kind of where it kind of started to split a little bit and kind of start to take shape, which is good because, you know, here comes Clifton Chenier, right? And he chose to play his music on the piano accordion because the reason, like I said earlier, is basically just a piano. It allows you to do more. He could still play the old French music on the piano accordion. And if he wanted to play a Ray Charles number, he can do that because it's basically a piano. He did a lot of Louis Jordan stuff, a lot of big band stuff. Try to see who else he, a lot of different stuff, and it allowed him to just stretch out more, and that's kind of the recipe I try to follow.
Well, it seems to me too, like with Zydeco, is like there's going to be a repertoire kind of traditional stuff, but it also seems like a music where if somebody wants to bring in a John Lee Hooker song or something, and Zydeco eyes it, that's part of the game too, right?
Yes, it's basically Zydeco, in my opinion, is like Zydeco, which is funny. Zydeco even rhymes with gumbo. So gumbo, you got a pot of all kind of stuff in there. And Zydeco is the same way. You just got all kind of stuff in there. You could, and just about anything will work with it. You know, you can, just like gumbo, just you could put anything in it. As long as you know how to cook it, it'll work. So it's kind of like that with Zydeco. As long as you know how to play it, it'll work.
I wonder, too, in Louisiana, because it's such a, it, I don't know, in my mind, such a, like, a musical place.
Definitely.
And my perception is that there's also, like, respect with musicians across genres, so that if you're a jazz player, you have a lot of respect for the rock player and vice versa, that you're all kind of doing the same thing, in a way.
There's definitely a big respect, especially towards the traditional side of things. You know, you got to respect, you know, the tradition and where it started from. And I was talking about Bunk Johnson a little earlier because, you know, my great grandfather played with him. But I found out there's a book on Bunk Johnson, and in the book it said that Bunk is originally from New Orleans, right? And so, but in New Orleans at that time, when musicians played, they had to read their music and you had to play it the way it was written, and that was it. But towards this side, kind of where like my family's from, Parks area, Breaux-Bridge, Lafayette, this side, it was more like a jam kind of thing. Like you just played what you felt. And in the book, it said that's one of the reasons why Bunk Johnson left New Orleans and moved to New Iberia, which is closer to like St. Martinville, Lauraville, stuff like that, because the musicians over here still respect the music, but they just were like, let's just jam. I'll do my thing, you do your thing, and let's just jam and have a good time. And that was one of the reasons why he left New Orleans and came over here. So there's definitely still a respect for the traditional stuff, but I guess it's preference, on how people wanna create their music and play their music.
So when you started gigging, what was that like? I mean, were you doing like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, kind of, playing in a corner, a restaurant, or were you doing street stuff? Where did you kind of start cutting your teeth?
Well, I first started playing music while I was still in Houston, actually. I was about maybe 11 or 12 years old, and my dad took me to this restaurant, and they had an older guy. His name was LC Donato. He was playing that day, and my dad talked to Mr. LC and said, "Hey, my son has learned how to play drums. Can you let him come play a song or two?" So he said, "Yeah, bring him up." So I played a little bit, and in the audience was another older gentleman. His name was Mr. Wilbert Thibodeau, and he saw me. And after I finished play, he came up to me and my dad said, "Hey, I like the way your son plays drums." He said, "I just had to fire my drummer last week, and I'm looking for a new drummer. Would your son be able to do something like that?" And my dad was like, "Sure, he can do that." So I started playing drums with Wilbert Thibodeau and the Zydeco Rascals in Houston right around 12 years old. And I stayed with him until about maybe 16. So I was playing around town in Houston on drums. That was like my first band, I guess you can say. But then after high school, I moved back over here and I got with my cousin Greg Poche. And we decided to do this band thing. So we started doing, again, like little restaurants and doing the local festivals, and it just kind of all grew from there. So I've been playing for well over 30 something years now.
So what's it like to be like 12 years old? You're in a band with older guys.
Yeah. Well, at first, you're young, you're a kid, like you don't want to be around the older people, right? But as I started to play, and I love Zydeco music anyway, I just love the music. But as I started to play with him, I really started to enjoy it. And then I started to understand like how to perform for an audience, how to read your audience. And I learned. I used to have bad timing. I learned, I guess you could say, I got my timing right. I learned how to keep my time by playing with the older guy, because he would always tell me, "Watch my foot, play." Because back in those days, the bands they didn't have big equipment like they have today. Like now, you got a wall of speakers on each side of the band and floor monitors all over. But we didn't have all that. We only had two speakers, and we had to share that with the audience. So playing behind the speakers, it was kind of hard to hear what was going on stage. So sometimes my tempo would go up or go down. And Mr. Tippett will say, "Watch my foot, play to the beat of my foot." So I had to watch his foot. And when his foot came down, that's when I'm supposed to hit my snare. And I watched and I watched and I watched until the muscle memory kicked in. So I learned all that.
That's amazing. I would think too, the benefit of like playing with older musicians as opposed to just like people your age is that you also kind of figure out the business side of it pretty quickly, like be on time, this is how you get paid, blah, blah, blah.
Oh yeah, I think it was maybe the second gig I played with Mr. Thibodeau. I forgot my foot pedal for the bass drum at home, so my dad had to go back home and get the foot pedal. But until that time, I had to play the bass drum with my arm. So I was playing the snare with my left arm and the bass drum with my right arm. So I learned then, before you leave home, and Mr. Thibodeau told me after the gig, he said, "Before you leave home, first of all, make sure you leave in enough time. That way, if something happens, you got time to do whatever you got to do. But before you leave home, have you a checklist. Go through your checklist and make sure you got everything." So yeah, I learned stuff like that.
Yeah. That's very cool too. And you're getting paid at like 12 years old. for something that you love doing.
Yeah, so $60 for a 12-year-old back in the '90s was pretty good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. So I guess it makes sense then in some ways too that you've got this live album out because that's where you cut your teeth. Everything was performance, and this is kind of a way of having like a calling card of like, hey, this is what I do, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I've always wanted to do, is to have a live album that just captured an amazing experience. It's all about the experience and the energy. And like I said, we've tried to do it before, but things didn't line up, but they lined up this time, and I'm super excited about this. Like, I can't even put it into words. Like, this is the one.
You've been listening to a conversation with Corey Ledet. His album, Corey Ledet, Zydeco, and Black Magic's Live in Alaska is out now. You can learn more about him via CoreyLedet.com, that's L-E-D-E-T, or via his social media pages on Instagram and Facebook. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. We welcome your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And as always, it's important to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.